We're up to Parshat Vayechi. Parshat Vayechi begins without pause. It is connected to the previous parsha. Ordinarily, when we start a parsha, there's a break in the Sefer Torah. There's some white space to denote that there's a new chapter beginning. Parshat Vayechi doesn't have that. And the idea is that Yaakov Avinu wanted to reveal the secrets of the future to his children, and Hashem didn't allow him to do that. And we have to realize how important that is on a few fronts. On one front, if we ever knew the conclusion of any test, we could handle it. If a person couldn't find the shidduch and he knew ultimately he would, he could live that way. If Sarah knew at age 90 you're going to have a child, she could live that way. If Yitzchok knew after that Akedah you're going to go home and have kids and everything's going to be all right, he could live that way. Every test has this factor which makes it so much harder, and that is that you don't know if there's a light at the end of the tunnel. Maybe there is no end of the tunnel. That's part of the difficulty in life. And Yaakov, on the one end, if he could only tell them when it's all going to be over, so that gives them strength, but it would also weaken them. Think back, it's been thousands of years. If they knew back then, for all this time, that it would take this many millennium to get this our job done on this planet, boy, would that dishearten them. And that's another part of the challenge of this fourth galut, the galut of Esav, which is Ve'evrato Shemar HaNetzach, the fact that Esav gives us the feeling that this is forever. It's just isn't going to end. That's part of the challenge, and that's the way it's described in Daniel, and that's the way it's described in the Midrashim. And over here, Yaakov wants to reveal to them when it's all going to be over, and Hashem doesn't let him. So Yaakov first calls in Yosef and asks him to promise he'll take him into the land of Israel to bury him there, makes him promise, and Yosef promises. We'll quickly go through the parasha and then we'll review it. Yaakov is ill, Yosef is summoned, Yaakov blesses Yosef's two children, the famous Hamalacha Goeloti, he should bless the children, they should flourish. And then Yaakov switches his hands, Yosef tries to straighten him out, Yaakov tells him, I know what I'm doing, and Yaakov blesses him like that, and then he calls in all the kids, and he starts talking to each of them. So he takes Reuven and he gives him over his head. What'd you mess up my sleeping arrangements for? What are you getting involved? You lost so much because you got involved in something that wasn't yours. You acted too quickly. Shimon and Levi, you guys are using tools that are not yours. I had no portion with your murderous ways. You killed the whole city just because you felt like it. Your anger should be cursed and you guys should be scattered in Israel. Yehuda! Oh, Yehuda's taking a step back after what he heard. He's waiting for his doozy. His father tells him, everyone's going to thank you because the enemies will run away. You'll grab them. Everyone's going to bow to you. You are a lion. You avoided killing your brother. You are going to be the leader of Israel forever. You're going to have a territory that's going to flourish with wine and milk. Zvulun, you'll be out at sea. Yisachar, you're going to take the weight of Torah and you're going to take control. You're going to be the leaders of Torah in Israel. Dan, you're going to be able to be like a snake that bites the horse and the enemy gets thrown off the horse. And you're going to have a leader that's going to be so great that he'll be able to single-handedly judge all of Israel. Gad, you're going to be raiders and you'll overcome ultimately. Asher, so you're going to have... You're going to have... bread that's fat, and you'll have royal girls. Naphtali, you're like a ram that's been sent out, and you give goodly words. Yosef, he has a lot to say about Yosef. You're going to be fruitful. Yosef, you had girls dancing on the all over the walls when you were taken out as king, and you didn't look up at any of them. Your brothers tried to embitter you. They held their enmity towards you. They wanted to knock you down with their arrows. And you, your bow and arrow, yours was much stronger. When you were tempted with Potiphar's wife, you didn't cave into temptation. You had the power of Yaakov. You are the father of Israel. Your blessings are greater than the blessings I had. And you, Yosef, should have all these blessings. You are Nizir Echav. You are the one who was separated from his brothers. Binyamin, you're like a ravenous wolf. You consume in the morning and at night you divide your loot, which is again a reference to Binyamin's future. Yaakov blesses them and then he tells them, I'm going to pass away, bury me in that cave, the Maris HaMachpelah that Avram purchased. I buried Leah there, bury me there, and here's the deed that we own it. Yaakov finishes his speech, he lies on the bed and passes away. Yosef kisses him, it's the first time they're going to kiss in these 17 years. Ever since Yosef re-meets with his father won't kiss him. His father's always wondering how clean he is. Clean, I mean spiritually. What's he been up to those 20 years that they were separated? 21 years. And Yosef has his father mummified, and then they take the body up to be buried in Israel. When they come, so many nations get together to mourn the passing of Yaakov. Yaakov gets buried, they come back to Israel, and the brothers are worried. What's Yosef going to do to them? So they say, you know, Dad left word that you should forgive us for what we've done to you. And when Yosef hears that, he cries, and they fall before him. They didn't say anything. They say, we're all your servants. And he says, don't worry. What, you think I'm going to do you any harm? You see, God took care of us in sending me down here. That way, so many people's lives were spared. Notice that they never ask him forgiveness, and he never forgives them. Yaakov's, Yosef's brothers, as much as they're apologetic, they never ask for mechila. And Yosef is never mochel them. Meaning, on the one hand, he's good to them. On the other hand, they never ask his forgiveness. And that's why the weight of this sin remained upon us for years. As much as they try to make it up, you know, they came to Egypt looking for Yosef. They contended with all the hardships he lay before them. And they were willing to risk their lives for the other brother. But when finally Yosef reveals himself, and at the end of our parsha, when the brothers beg him, look, we'll do whatever you want, they never come out and say, you know, Yosef, we were wrong. We're sorry. So this sin remained with us. Yosef says, I'm going to take care of you guys, and he speaks, he comforts them, and Yosef passes away at the age of 110. He sees his grandchildren, he sees his great grandchildren, and when Yosef passes away, he leaves with the other children, with the other tribes, he leaves the tradition, Pakod yifkod etchem, redeem, God shall redeem you and bring you back to the land. And he tells them, take my bones out with you. He passes away, and he's placed in the ark in Egypt. And that's the conclusion of the book of Bereishis. So now let's see the parsha.
I have a question.
I have many.
Yeah. Why are you buried in Shechem and not in Beit Machpelah?
There's no more room. Last burial spot that was there was for Yaakov. There were 8 beds there. There were 8 crevices in the wall from the days of creation in Maris HaMachpelah.
He lived in Shem.
What?
He lived in Shem.
Who?
Yosef.
Yosef for Yaakov or Yosef?
He said. You said. What did you say?
You were talking about Yosef, no?
He just said Yaakov.
He said lived in Shem.
Wait, I don't know. No,
Yaakov was the last one to be buried in Maris HaMachpelah. There was no more room after Yaakov, as we will see shortly. So Yaakov lives in Egypt for 17 years. Yosef is a tzaddik. A tzaddik is one who tries to do things in an honest and complete fashion. His father took care of him for 17 years. When he was 17 years old, he was sold into slavery. Yosef, in turn, ends up taking care of his father and the whole family for 17 years. He pays back. Yaakov summons Yosef, and he asks Yosef to ensure that he's buried in Israel. Yaakov is concerned that the Egyptians will make him into an idol. It's a great honor for Egypt to have Yaakov buried there. Yaakov doesn't want that. So, Yosef says, fine, you want me to take you out, I'll take you out. Yaakov says, promise me. And this is an important point. Ultimately, we see that Paro only agrees because Yosef says, I promised. And sometimes people think, why do I need that extra seal? Why do I need that extra signature? And don't be lazy. We like to believe everything will work out right in life. No. If you could have a guarantor, if you could have a promise, if you could have a signature, however you can protect yourself, protect yourself. Yaakov Aminu tells Yosef, promise me. Who knows? Maybe Paro will say, no, don't. Tell him you promised. They'll have to respect it. And that's exactly what happens. Now, Yaakov Avinu, he sees that people are dropping dead with a sneeze. The way the world worked until the days of Yaakov was that if came time for a person to die, he'd sneeze and drop dead. So Yaakov says to God, we need a little bit more time before people die. You have to make a situation where people slowly get weaker and then something happens that warns them that that death is imminent. So God says it's a good idea, I'll do that. And God invents illness. And that's why the first person who gets ill in the Torah is Yaakov Avinu, because Hashem, Yaakov asked for it. Yaakov said, let it be a gradual thing so people have time to prepare themselves and their families. Yaakov calls in Yosef. Now, when Reuven sinned, by moving the beds, by interfering with who his father slept with, so then he lost his rights to the firstborn. And what happened then was that he had, originally, he was supposed to be the one who would have priests, kings, and a double portion. He lost it all. So Levi got the priesthood. Shimon didn't deserve it, the way with what Shimon did. And Yehuda got the rights to being kings, and Yosef got the double portion. So again, we go down in order. Shimon loses their rights. The next one in line is Levi. The next one in line is Yehuda. And then Rachel's first son, Yosef, he gets the rights to the double portion in the countings in the land of Israel. And that's what Yaakov says to Yosef. He says, your two sons, Ephraim and Menashe, are going to be considered like Reuven and Shimon by me. Everyone else, if you have more kids, all the other kids, they're going to have to be factored into Ephraim and Menashe's lots. And then he says, look, I know I'm troubling you. I'm asking you to take me out to be buried in Israel. And when your mother passed away, we were a short distance from Maros HaMachpelah. Why didn't I bury her there? Well, so your mother, well, she died at childbirth. When a woman dies at childbirth, so it's a bloody scene. And it's not respectful for her to start carrying her body in such a state out to Maros HaMachpelah. Out of respect for her, I buried her there where she passed away. I was there with a bunch of kids. I had all the kids with me. I had all the cattle with me. I had to do what was best for her. Out of respect for her, I buried her by the roadside. Think about it. You see here a few things. You see how traumatic it might have been for Yosef. His mother passes away. There's a family plot not far away. And Yaakov doesn't take Rachel to the family plot. He knows his grandmother was buried there. His great-grandmother was buried there. Adam and Eve were buried there. The family spent a lot of money to purchase the family plot. And it's a few hours' journey to just go there and bury her there. And his father doesn't do it. And it's interesting. We don't have a record that Yaakov ever explained this to Yosef. Sometimes a parent has to maintain an accounting. I owe him an explanation for that. How many years have passed since then? Decades. Right? It's been decades. Because Binyamin already has 10 kids. Binyamin was born then. You're talking about almost half a century later. And Yaakov still remembers. And he says, you know, Yosef must still be wondering, what did I do? Why didn't I bury his mother the way I should? And so Yaakov gives him an answer. And Yaakov asks him, who are these kids? Yaakov can't see so clearly. He says, these are my kids. You know, I have a legal marriage. I have a Jewish girl. Yosef takes out the marriage contract to show his father. All the years, Yaakov doesn't ask him, who's your wife? He doesn't put Yosef on the spot. But all the years, he's wondering, where did he pick up this girl from? The girl happens to have been Yaakov's own granddaughter. Dina's daughter from Shechem. Remember, Dina and Shechem had a daughter. Yaakov was concerned that maybe the other tribes would be there. The other tribes were protesting. How could we have a commemoration of such an act in our home? This is Shechem's daughter walking around in our home. And so to protect her, Yaakov sends her down to an adopted family, to Potiphar. So Osnat grows up with Yosef in the same house. And then Yosef and Osnat marry. Now Osnat is a phenomenal woman. Remember, her mother was a righteous woman. When Potiphar's wife went after Yosef, it was because she saw in the stars that she was supposed to have the Mashiach come from her and Yosef. She erred in her stargazing. She thought it was her. It was really her adopted daughter. Chazal say, whoever adopts a child and raises him, it's as though they gave birth to that child. In Shemaim, it's considered as though that's their child. So, Osnat is really like Potiphar's daughter. When the stars show that Potiphar and his wife is supposed to have the Mashiach together with Yosef, it doesn't literally mean Potiphar's wife and Yosef. It means Potiphar's wife's daughter. From her is supposed to come the Mashiach. She's not her biological daughter. But you see, the Gemara points this out in numerous places, that whoever brings up someone else's kid, it's as though they had that child. So, now, it's now or never, Yosef says to him, these kids have a legitimate mother, and we have a legitimate marriage. And Yaakov says, bring them in, I want to bless them. And Yosef brings them to his father. And Yaakov comments, you know, I never thought I'd see you. Look, I'm even seeing your kids. The simple understanding, Chazal tell us that one has to arouse one's spirit to give a blessing. A blessing has to emanate from a point of happiness, of contentedness. So Yaakov is pointing out, look at how thankful we have to be. Look at how appreciative. Look at where we've gotten. Yaakov switches his hands. So over the kids' heads, his hands are crossed, but the kids don't have to see that. And he starts blessing them. And he says, my forefathers walked before Hashem, and he took care of me till today. The angel that redeemed me, saved me from all harm, should bless the kids. And my name and my forefathers' name should be upon them. That's not such a given. These kids are Egyptian kids. Their grandfather isn't Yaakov. Their grandfather is Shechem. Hamor. Your father's right. Osnas is the daughter of Shechem. Yaakov says, these kids should have my name on them. These kids should be considered the descendants of Avraham, Yitzchak. They should flourish in the land. V'yidgu larov, they should flourish like fish. What's unique about fish? Fish, ayin hara, doesn't touch them. And this is the blessing of Yosef's family, that the evil eye can't touch them. Why? Because Yosef wasn't willing to lift his eye and look at someone else's wife. He wasn't willing to take in something that wasn't his. Someone who keeps his eyes focused on his own things, so then when other people look at his things and say, gee, I wish I had some of that, and then ordinarily in heaven that should affect something. When someone looks at someone else's thing and says, gee, why does he have that and I don't? That's called an ayin hara. So in heaven they say, gee, he has a point. Let's look over the records. Maybe he shouldn't have that. That's ayin hara. Ayin hara is Reuven looks at Shimon's watch and says, I wish I had a watch like that. Why does he have it and I don't? That's really the thought that's happening. So in Shemayim, once Reuven lays claim on Shimon's watch, in Shemayim they say, okay, let's review the books. Reuven has a claim. Maybe Shimon shouldn't have it. Notice they don't say maybe Reuven should. They say if Reuven says maybe Shimon shouldn't have more than he does, so maybe really Shimon shouldn't. But with Yosef that doesn't happen. With Yosef's offspring, when Yosef wasn't even willing to look at what wasn't his, let alone think, I wish I had that. He wasn't even willing to look in that direction. So then in Shemayim, they don't let anyone else look at what he has badly. It doesn't affect anything if they do. Yeah?
Does that work, that protection from evil eye work, if you already know that, you know, I'm only not looking at other people's things because I don't want to, you know?
I don't know.
Or does it have to come from like a righteous...
I don't know. So Yosef thinks his father is making a mistake because he's putting his right hand on the younger son, and he tries to shift his father's hand, and he says, no, no, Dad, this one's the elder one. And his father says, I know. He's also going to be successful, but the little one, he's going to be much bigger. and he blesses them. And he says, all of Israel will bless their children. Yisimcha Elokim kefayim lechim nashe. Wow. Non-Jewish father. Rapist for a grandfather. Not a non-Jewish father, a non-Jewish grandfather. The guy raped Dina and had Osnas, their mother. And she is the prime woman of Jewish history. If you want to know how to raise your kids, look at how her kids came out. Gives us something to look up to. Because we sometimes think, well, if my father was the chief rabbi, then okay, then I'd be like this. If I came from a whole house that, then I'd be, you know, that excuse only goes so far. You grew up not knowing anything about Judaism. That works until the point where you do know. Now you have to write your own script. There's a fantastic mashal, which I grew up with, but it's a fantastic thought. If we think of our lives as a book that we're writing, then we have to ask ourselves, what do we want in that book? At the end of the day, we're writing the script every day. Every year is a new chapter, and we decide what's going to go into that chapter. We can't erase the past, but we can decide what's going to be in the future. When I was a kid, they used to have these books, Choose Your Own Adventure, where you'd read a page or two, they'd describe a story, and then they'd say, okay, now what do you do? If you chose to go into the cave, turn to page 56. If you chose, it's not safe, I'm going to go back and see how everything's doing, turn to page 72. You'd like every few pages, you'd make a choice, and then you'd paint your own picture. And then you'd have different endings. Sometimes you'd get killed. Sometimes all kinds of horrible things could happen. And sometimes you'd have a nice ending. So choose your own adventure. But you know what? Life is choose your own adventure. We are writing our book. And Osnas is the great heroine. She chooses that her future will not be defined based on what her past is. I heard a fantastic pshat this year. I don't know who says it. That even the name Osnas comes from the word Ones. Ones means rape, so they switched the letters around. They didn't want to call her Onesat, so they called her Osna. But that's really what her name comes from. What a name to live with! Wow. But she didn't let it knock her down. She became the great mother of Jewish history, who had these children, brought them up in the filthiest neighborhood, brought them up in the slums, but brought them up to be fine people. So all of Israel blesses their kids. You should be like Ephraim and Menashe. They had true character. And Yaakov tells the Yosef, when you come back to Israel, I'm giving you that extra portion of Shechem. I conquered Shechem. Your brothers can say whatever they want. At the end of the day, the nations wanted to take us down after what they did. I conquered Shechem. It's mine and I'm giving it to you. Yaakov gathers in the rest of the kids. And he says, listen to what I'm going to tell you. He's about to tell them the future, and the Shechina leaves Yaakov. So Yaakov wonders, what's with you guys? So the brothers say, we're all monotheists. Yaakov says, maybe one of you's been doing something on the side. They say, no, we're all monotheists. And that's the first time that the Pasuk Shema Yisrael is said in world history. The brothers all say to Yaakov in unison, Shema Yisrael, listen, Dad, Israel, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem is our God, Hashem Echad, and we believe only in Him. Yaakov hears that, he says, Yehei Shmei Rabba Mevorach. He says, Baruch Shem Kvod Machusu Lolem Voed. Okay, blessed be His name for eternity. So that's why, according to the Medrash, there are different understandings. What are we saying when we say Shema? The simple understanding is we're making a declaration. You're standing in shul, and really every person should say Shema out loud. Today, for some reason, us Ashkenazim don't do that. But technically in Shulchan Aruch it says that every person should say Shema out loud. You're making a declaration. Tam Yisrael, Hashem Lokeinu, Hashem Echad. You're making a declaration to yourself. The Medrash says you're talking to Yaakov Avinu also. You're saying, look, Dad, no hands. No, look, Dad, we're still monotheists. Shema Yisrael, listen, Grandpa. We're still saying it. Hashem Lokeinu, Hashem Echad. Hashem, we still believe. We're still in the fold. So after they say that, so Yaakov Avinu says, Baruch Shem. Moshe Rabbeinu says, okay, what do we do now? Yaakov Avinu said, Baruch Shem. The Torah doesn't say it. So we say it quietly. We couldn't leave it out, because Yaakov said it. We couldn't leave it in, because the Torah doesn't say it. So we say it quietly. Yaakov gathers them, and he gives Reuven over the head. Notice that he waits till the last minute. He wasn't procrastinating. He knew that to accept rebuke is something that's very, very tough. And to accept rebuke from someone that you're still going to meet tomorrow is very, very tough. If you want that rebuke to do something, you have to find the right time. And the right time is sometimes when there's going to be no more conversation. This is our last conversation. And Reuven has to learn his lesson. And even though Reuven does tshuva, he is the Baal tshuva, but he has to hear these lines from his father. The great lesson that Yaakov teaches with Reuven, he says, it was your swiftness. You acted too quickly. And that was the desecration. And in life, we have to remember this. There's a saying in Hebrew that says, "Hamehirut me'asatan." Doing things quickly is a gift of the Satan. You do things too quickly, you make mistakes. That's something to think about. People shoot out emails without thinking. Twitter. We live in a day and age where before you can think, you've already said everything to the world. I said that. There's a value to the word that's written and said. And Yaakov tells Reuven, you acted too fast. Today you see something, you tweet it, that's it. The world knows it. And people have paid a huge price for it. Pachas kamayim al totar. Because you went so fast, that's why you're not going to excel. Shimon v'Levi, you guys stole those goods. You have no right to deal with weapons like that. We're not people like that. My 4-year-old had little Lego men. And my 5-year-old came and said, I'm going to play with your little Lego men. So she said, okay, now this little Lego man stole from that little Lego man this piece. And he looks at her and he says, they're Jews. They don't do that. What's wrong with you? And he's getting all upset. My Lego men are Jewish. Don't you make them steal anything? That's what Yaakov says to Shimon and Levi. He says, you thieves, this isn't how Jews behave. Who gave you a right to go around killing a whole city? And it's very interesting because we spend a lot of time justifying what they did. We learn the Rambam, we learn the Ramban, we learn why Shechem was Chayev Misa. Okay, after all the answers are said and done, Shimon still gives him over the head. He still says, you didn't ask me. I had nothing to do with it. You uprooted a whole city. You wanted to kill your brother too. And he curses their anger. And that's, we always have to be careful. You don't tell a kid you're bad. You say, the anger's bad. You're good. The anger's bad. Yaakov Avinu curses the anger. He doesn't curse the kids. And Yaakov Avinu says, the solution is to scatter you. You have a room full of hotheads, you have an explosion. You have a city with no hotheads, then you have nothing. You need a few hotheads in every city. They'll get things moving, and the city will keep them calm. So you need them scattered. It's like a little bit of pilpil. You know, you have pepper. You can't have a dish full of pepper. But if you don't have any pepper, you don't have any salt, you don't have any flavor, you need a little bit of each, and that pulls out the flavor and everything else. So that's what Yaakov says to them. Levi that did tshuva was scattered in a positive way as educators of the country. Shimon that didn't do tshuva was scattered in a negative way. They didn't have an organized portion because they were troublemakers, so they had to keep them separate. Yehuda, we have a long thing. You guys are welcome to look online. We have the class of the Nachmanides debate with the apostate. Nachmanides goes into these psukim which the Christians want to interpret a different way. And he goes into why our interpretation, our tradition about which king is going to be from Judea and that the kings are always going to be from Judea. Zevulun is blessed that he will be a businessman. Zevulun and Yisachar had a deal where Zevulun would make money, Yisachar would learn Torah, and Zevulun would support Yisachar. Notice that Zevulun gets credit first. Zevulun is mentioned first, and this is the way it is in the Shas as well. You have Shimon Achia Azariah. Shimon is credited as the brother of Azariah. You think Azariah is supporting his brother Shimon, so then Azariah would say, look, my brother's the chief rabbi, Shimon. No, the Talmud, the Mishnah works the other way. It says, Shimon, the brother of Azariah, he takes credit for being the brother of the big businessman to tell us that when you have this partnership, we give a lot of credit to the guy who's doing the business in the Yisachar Zvulun deal. Okay? To be continued next year, Bezalel.